Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, February 12, 2019. Let's begin with today's headlines. The first headline reads, Missing Chinese Scholar. Judge rejects move to delay trial until October. DNA blood test to be admissible. This article is written by Ben Sigterman and is based out of Urbana. U.S. District Judge James Shadid, Shadid, denied a motion by Brent Christensen's lawyers to delay the trial of the accused kidnapper and killer from April to October. While saying he's open to reasonable proposals for a delay, October is simply out of the question, Shadid, told defense attorneys Monday at the federal courthouse in Urbana. It's ridiculous to me to even think to consider it. Christensen faces the death penalty if convicted at his trial for allegedly kidnapping and killing visiting University of Illinois scholar Yingying Zhang. Ms. Zhang, from China, was last seen June 9, 2017, entering Christensen's car near a bus stop on campus. She is presumed dead by the FBI. Christensen told FBI agents he let Ms. Zhang out a few blocks away, but prosecutors believe he took her back to his Champaign apartment, restrained her, caused her to bleed, and tried to clean the scene. Last week, Christensen's lawyers filed a motion to delay the trial, saying it would be impossible for their mental health experts to be ready by April, due in part to the extensive psychohistory they are compiling. If their client is convicted, lawyers plan to argue that Christensen has a serious mental illness and therefore doesn't deserve the death penalty. Shadid said delaying the case to October, more than 2 years after Ms. Zhang was last seen, was beyond what has happened in other high-profile cases. The trial of the Boston Marathon bomber, Zakhor, that's D-Z-H-O-K-H-A-R, Tsarnaev, began after 20 months, he noted. Oklahoma City Federal Building bomber Timothy McVeigh was tried after 2 years, and Charleston, South Carolina church shooter Dylan Roof, after 18 months, Shadid added. Julie Brain, the defense attorney handling the mental health aspect of his case, said Monday that she struggled mightily to find a psychiatrist who was experienced, qualified, and willing to work on the case. She said academics and researchers wouldn't touch this case with a 10-foot pole, quote-unquote. It wasn't until 3 months ago that a psychiatrist was retained, the defense pointed out. Then, on November 3, 2018, Brain said that psychiatrist told an April trial was too soon to be properly prepared for. She apparently told the psychiatrist that an April trial date wouldn't happen. I was intending to say I understood, Brain said, not that she didn't think the psychiatrist should prepare for an April trial. Bailing you out. Shadid asked why he wasn't notified about this exchange earlier and said he never gave any indication the trial would be delayed. The only thing at issue now is me bailing you out, he said. Without even hearing the prosecutor's opposition to a delay, he denied the motion but said he was open to reasonable proposals. For example, since Christensen's lawyers primarily want a delay to prepare for their mental health argument, which would come during the penalty phase, Shadid suggested a break between the guilt and penalty phases. In other death penalty cases, he said there have been breaks of 2 to 4 weeks. He asked what would be a reasonable break. Assistant U.S. Attorney Eugene Miller said the prosecutors would want a shorter break because memories fade. Also, a longer break would increase the chances for improper communications with jurors, Miller said. Assistant Federal Defender Elizabeth Pollock said, "We don't know." "I don't know either," Shadid said. With jury selection set to begin on April 1st, followed by the guilt phase, the penalty phase isn't expected to start until May. Shadid also expressed frustration over the delay for a request because most of the other pretrial motions have been taken care of. "If we kick it to October, then we do what?" Shadid asked. "Watch Netflix?" Canine's credibility. Two of the pending pretrial motions were heard Monday, with Shadid denying a motion to exclude DNA and blood test results taken from Christensen's apartment and saying he would issue a ruling soon on the admissibility of a cadaver-sniffing canine. The court heard testimony from Alex Rothacker, who trained Sage, a police dog that alerted to the presence of a body in the bathroom of Christensen's apartment. Rothacker described in detail how dogs are initially trained by his staff, then with the police handlers. He also described how dogs are trained to spot cadavers using real body parts from the Lake County coroner. Sage was trained first in 2010, then took another course on cadaver searches a year later, and one on water cadaver searches in 2012. In her cross-examination, Paula questioned whether Sage would have met guidelines set by forensic science experts. She also questioned Rothacker's credentials. While telling the court he only has a high school degree, Rothacker said he started working with dogs in 1976 under the tutelage of Willie Necker, a trainer for the military in World War II. Rothacker also cited 3 Guinness World Records and appearances on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, Martha Stewart's show, and Live with Regis and Kelly. One of the dogs he trained was able to jump rope 78 times in a minute, Rothacker said. Sage's handler, McHenry County Deputy Sheriff Jeremy Bruchetta, said in 40 trainings, the canine had found human remains 36 times with no false alerts. But those feats did not impress Mary Cabalk, C-A-B-L-K, who works for the Nevada-based Desert Research Institute and is herself a canine trainer. She testified that she couldn't calculate the reliability of Sage since he hadn't done true blind tests where there were no human remains to be found. I don't believe he's credible, she said. She said cadaver-sniffing dogs should follow the expert guidelines, which recommend 16 hours of cadaver training each month, and that police dogs should focus on being able to detect one thing. She also said indoor human remain searching can be tricky, as dogs will alert to places where there is normally blood, such as bathrooms or kitchens. It's particularly common for dogs to alert when in bathrooms because of blood from menstruation or shaving accidents, Cabalk said, along with the frequent presence of medication. Besides that, she said, being able to detect the residual effects of human remains is a specialized discipline. Test results stay in. While wrapping up, Pollock asked Cabalk if, hypothetically, blood was in multiple rooms of an apartment, the dog would alert to all the locations of the blood. Cabalk said she would expect the dog to do so, and that bleach doesn't affect the dog's ability to detect an odor. That hypothetical isn't so hypothetical. In this case, the defense has said blood was possibly found in both Christensen's bedroom and bathroom, but that Sage only alerted in the bathroom. And prosecutors have said they believe Christensen took steps to clean his apartment. Earlier Monday, Shadid denied a motion by Christensen's lawyers to exclude DNA and blood test results from Christensen's apartment. After questioning of an FBI laboratory expert, Shadid decided the test results meet the threshold for admissibility. Christensen's lawyers had been trying to exclude the results, which court filings have indicated show blood and Ms. Zhang's DNA at various places in Christensen's apartment. In response last week to the defense's motion, prosecutors said that evidence of handprint-shaped bloodstains were found in his apartment. In the defense's original motion last August, they said the possible presence of blood was found in his bedroom and bathroom. Further testing wasn't able to confirm blood on the mattress, bathroom sink strap, and bedroom wall and floor, but it was able to confirm blood found on a piece of carpet and a piece of baseboard. At Monday's hearing, Geraldine Conway, who works for the FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia, described how DNA and blood are tested. Her lab uses a product called STR Mix, which compares the lengths of about 24 different parts of a DNA sample and produces a likelihood ratio, quote-unquote, which measures how likely it is that the sample from the apartment matches a known sample from Ms. Zhang. In Ms. Zhang's case, the likelihood ratio ranged from 1.4 quintillion to 97 octillion, according to prosecutors. The FBI has been using STR Mix since 2015. Science of samples. Pollock argued that at least 50 of the studies lending credibility to STR Mix were authorized by one of the producers of the test. She also argued that the FBI should have used a newer DNA testing method that looks at the actual sequence of the DNA, not just the length of certain parts. And she said the defense wasn't able to look at the source code for how STR Mix reaches its likelihood ratio. When someone's life is at stake, you want to make sure the DNA test is accurate, Pollock said. Regarding the blood, Conway said the initial test is very sensitive and the stain will turn pink, even if there's very little sample present. But the sample can turn pink with a number of different substances, including horseradish and some cleaning supplies, so a confirmatory test for blood is also done. With that test, the sample will create orange crystals only if blood is present. However, Conway said, if the confirmatory test doesn't come back positive, it doesn't mean blood wasn't present, just that it couldn't be confirmed. While Pollock argued that unconfirmed tests would prejudice the trial jury, Miller said it would be unfairly prejudicial to the prosecution to not let Conway testify about the science behind the tests. After some back and forth, Shadid ruled in the prosecution's favor, allowing the blood and DNA test results to be used at trial. The next headline reads, Justice, Equity, and Opportunity Initiative. Governor Pritzker announces Justice Reform Initiative. This is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Illinois Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker on Monday announced the creation of a new office that will address what he says is a broken justice system. The Justice, Equity, and Opportunity Initiative will be headed by Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and is expected to look at criminal sentencing, education, poverty, and the link among the three. It's time to modernize sentencing, especially for low-level drug offenses, Pritzker said. It's time to reduce the recidivism rate and reentry through a holistic approach that addresses opportunity both inside and outside of our prisons. Stratton said the JEO initiative, that's, again, Justice, Equity, and Opportunity, the JEO initiative, will move Illinois justice from a punitive system to one that examines the root causes of the issues the state faces. Pritzker noted the state spends roughly $1.3 billion a year for the Department of Corrections, which houses about 43,000 inmates in a system made for about 32,000. The governor's order includes developing bias-free assessment tools for judges to use to determine sentences. The next headline reads, Huawei, that's H-U-A-W-E-I, Huawei. UI move to keep telecom disconnected. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Champaign. The University of Illinois took steps in 2016 to forbid equipment from a Chinese telecommunications equipment maker that the U.S. government now considers a national security threat. In December of that year, the U of I, with the College of Engineering, took the initiative to forbid the connecting of any equipment or other items from Huawei that would connect to our networks by wired, wireless, or any other connection, spokeswoman Robin Kaler said. We also required any engaged researchers to take reasonable steps to prevent Huawei employees from connecting to our networks, she said. Illinois is one of several U.S. universities to take similar steps, according to a Reuters report last month, including the University of California, Berkeley, the University of Wisconsin, and Stanford University. Those universities reviewed their equipment and in some cases removed it, Reuters reported, to comply with the National Defense Authorization Act, signed into law last year, and avoid losing federal funding. That act restricted recipients of federal funding from using equipment from Huawei and some other Chinese tech companies. Illinois took its steps in 2016 before the law was signed, but after U.S. officials began warning about Huawei. Around the same time the U of I took those steps, the U of I Research Park added Huawei as a tenant. It opened an initial office in the fall of 2016, according to the Research Park website, and held a grand opening for its space in October 2017. But Kaler and the Research Park developer said Huawei employees there don't use university internet or equipment. Companies in the Research Park, except those in our Enterprise Works incubator, commercially lease office suites from a private landlord, not the University of Illinois, Kaler said. They are responsible for providing their own equipment and contract with private internet service providers. A Wi-Fi network with the name Huawei Champagne appears around its office at the Atkins Building in the Research Park, and Andrea Rudy, R-U-E-D-I, with Fox Atkins Development, confirmed that Huawei uses its own equipment and networks. They have a lease just like any other tenant, she said. So it's a binding contract between the owner of the building, the landlord, and Huawei. The university is not part of that agreement. Regarding their equipment and networking, Rudy said, they set up everything themselves. Huawei officials, both at the Research Park office and at its corporate office, did not respond to requests for comment. Huawei is the second largest manufacturer of cell phones and the world's largest manufacturer of telecommunications equipment, which is used in cell towers and routers, for example. The U.S. government has been issuing warnings since at least 2012 that Huawei equipment could be used to spy on American companies and government agencies, though there's been no public evidence that it's done so. The antagonism has heated up in recent months. Meng, M-E-N-G, Wanzhou, W-A-N-Z-H-O-U, Huawei's chief financial officer, daughter of its founder, was arrested in December for allegedly violating U.S. sanctions against Iran by selling equipment to the country through a subsidiary. And last month, the U.S. Department of Justice filed 13 charges against the company and Meng, including for allegedly stealing trade secrets from T-Mobile. Huawei has denied the charges. And now let's look at our weather forecast for the next few days. This is provided to us by Greg Solier and his column on the weather front. Tomorrow, a low-pressure system will intensify while moving into the Great Lakes region. Rainfall in the Mid-South and Ohio Valley could reach 1 to 3 inches. Farther north, snow will affect the upper Midwest. Snow, sleet, and freezing rain will persist in the Northeast. Conditions will improve by midweek as the low-pressure system moves into eastern Canada. Farther west, wintry conditions from the Pacific Northwest to the Northern Rockies will subside by midweek, while the focus for precipitation will shift south into California. Toward week's end, the west will receive precipitation, while a new storm could deliver snow to the Great Lakes region and rain in the southern U.S. Today, 37 degrees, windy and colder, fog before noon, occasional rain before noon, some mixed rain and snow in spots, shifts to snow. Cloudy, chance of precipitation 70%. Overnight, windy, snow showers early. Wednesday, the high will be 35, the low will be 19. It will be mostly sunny, breezy, west to northwest wind 12 to 22 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, increasing clouds, not as cold. Thursday, the high will be 45, the low will be 33. Windy, milder, occasional rain. Cloudy, chance of rain increasing to 60%. Friday, the high will be 38, the low will be 37, turning windy and colder. Occasional rain mixed with and shifts to snow. Cloudy, chance of precipitation 70%. Saturday, the high is 29 and the low will be 20, breezy and colder, partly cloudy. And now, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. There aren't many dull moments for Oakwood High School senior Peyton Frerichs. That's Peyton, P-A-I-T-O-N, Frerichs, 18, who plays 3 sports, volleyball, basketball, softball, and keeps stats for a 4th, football. On Thursday, our high school confidential correspondent will showcase yet another sport, wrestling, as part of our Snapchat Takeover series. Frerichs, F-R-E-R-I-C-H-S, plans to be there when the Comets send off 4 wrestlers ahead of this weekend's IHSA meet in Champaign. She'll also have Principal Tim Lee explain the Twitter hashtag, Great to be Young and a Comet, introduce the new softball coach, and show what the Vermilion County School is doing for Valentine's Day. Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app. Frerichs, part of 7 county title winning volleyball and basketball teams, is headed to Danville Area Community College, or DAC, in what she hopes is the first step toward her career in neonatology. Follow her busy ways and days on Twitter. Her handle is pfrerichs, so P-F-R-E-R-I-C-H-S 25. You can also find her on Instagram at Peyton, P-A-I-T-O-N underscore Frerichs, F-R-E-R-I-C-H-S, and Snapchat pfrerichs 25. At newsgazette.com, here's what was trending at our website, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,324,064 page views. 1. 7 students, parent, arrested after fights at Urbana High. 2. Prosecutors, evidence of handprint-shaped bloodstains found in Christensen's apartment. 3. Judge in detaining Urbana students, dangerous, out-of-control situation. The 3 top sports stories. 1. First and 10, Asmussen's wish list of schools to join the Big Ten. 2. Illini lose Butkus to Packers. And 3. Asmussen. Criticize him all you want, but Datchik, a fan of Underwood's Illini. The three top videos. 1. Bezanishvili's big game carries Illini. 2. Signing day brings more than just player additions. And 3. Illinois pulls off major upset. The three top photo galleries. 1. All-access game day at State Farm Center. 2. U of I men's basketball versus Michigan State 2019. And 3. High school girls basketball Unity Regional. History. Area history. In 1919, girls from the domestic science department at Urbana High School served a bean supper to their fellow students. While the students ate their beans, they listened to a speech by University of Illinois track athlete Dick Thompson. In 1969, a four-way primary for Urbana mayor was set, with Charles Zibrot and Opal Thomas competing in the Republican primary, and Jean Marie Wiley, that's W-Y-L-E, and Paul Hersey battling in the Democratic primary. Citizens were warned the bars in Urbana would be closed until 6 p.m. on Election Day. In 2004, the University of Illinois began charging people to walk in the U of I Armory. The U of I made good on its promise to begin imposing the $3 fee after generations of free community access to the gigantic 4th Street Quonset Hut. Associate Chancellor Larry Mann said people using the armory would have to go through room 190 in the southwest corner of the building. That point was designated so officials could control access to the area and make it safer and less chaotic for people to use. And in international history, today's highlight, on February 12, 1999, the Senate voted to acquit President Bill Clinton of perjury and obstruction of justice. The next headline reads, Unit 4 School District, Board opens central project for bidding. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Champaign. Progress marches on for the Champaign School District's Central High School expansion as board members approved opening up the project for bidding this Friday. Capital Projects Manager Mark Roessler, that's R-O-E-S-S-L-E-R, gave board members a familiar refrain, saying the project, like others in the district's $183.4 million referendum lineup, had experienced quote-unquote budget issues, forcing more reevaluations of what is necessary for the project. Alternates or options that the district would like included but aren't immediately necessary include things like a performance wireless microphone for the theater, an in-ground lift for cars and shop class, and the option to turn the land at 617 West Church Street into an addition to Central's main parking lot. The budgeted amount for the expansion of Central High School was $87.1 million, which is where the project's total currently sits. Bids for the project release Friday and come back to the district on March 21st. O'Shea Builders representative Greg Doolin, D-O-O-L-I-N, said bidders will be canvassed within half a state away in all directions. In other board news, members announced the departure of the district's Director of Communications and Community Relations, Emily Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-T. Board documents note the effective date of Schmidt's resignation is February 19th. The board also approved a number of expenses, including $40,109 for 4 months of legal fees from Franchek Radelet PC, a Chicago-based law firm brought in during negotiations with the Champaign Federation of Teachers. The next headline reads, Man allegedly threatens to bomb child at school. This article is based out of Gibson City and is written by Will Brumleave for the Ford County Record. A Gibson City man being held at the Ford County Jail allegedly said he would blow up Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School before he was arrested shortly after midnight Monday. Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian released to News Gazette Media's Ford County Record on Monday night a verified statement of arrest from Gibson City Police Sergeant Caleb Kraft, detailing the alleged comments made Sunday night by 43-year-old Adit P. Bidet. I will blow you up at your school, the resident of 812 North Bell Street allegedly told a juvenile family member who attends GCMS High. The alleged threat was reported to Gibson City Police around 10:25 p.m. Sunday by three girls accompanied by their mother. One of the juveniles was the alleged victim of the threat, identified in the court document as Jane Doe, and told police she was visiting a family member, Rebecca Zook, at the home Zook shares with Bidet when he apparently became upset with her because she stands up for Zook. The girl said that when she arrived at the residence around 10 p.m. with her two sisters and another juvenile friend, Bidet said he was going to bed early and then went into his bedroom. He later re-entered the living room area and became upset, saying the juvenile family member was being disrespectful and then allegedly making the bomb threat. 3 days earlier, the girl said Bidet told her she was on his hit list, quote-unquote. Her two sisters told police they heard him tell her, "I will blow you up at your school," and police confirmed that their friend who was present also mentioned the bomb threat to her father after arriving home. When police arrived at his home, Bidet said he did not remember threatening anyone and said they are just kids. Zook told police she heard the argument taking place while she was having a conversation with another juvenile, but she could not hear specifically what was being said. Kraft said that Zook told a Ford County Sheriff's deputy that she heard someone ask Bidet to clarify if he was going to blow her up and the school. Bidet was arrested at his home on a preliminary Class 4 felony charge of disorderly conduct for making a threat against a person and a school. Killian said he expects to make a decision on what, if any, charges to file later this week after receiving a police report. At this time, no formal charges have been filed, and all individuals are presumed innocent unless proven guilty in a court of law, Killian said in an emailed statement. Bidet remained at the Ford County Jail in Paxton on Monday with bond set at $6,000. Conditions of his bond include staying at least 300 feet from GCMS school buildings and the residence of the juvenile family member, having no contact with the juvenile and undergoing mental health evaluations. A preliminary hearing was set for 9 a.m. March 1st in Judge Matt Fitton's court. Gibson City Police Chief Adam Rosendahl said that after the threat was reported, police contacted GCMS Superintendent Jeremy Darnell, who joined officers and Ford County Sheriff's deputies in conducting a precautionary security check of all three GCMS schools, Rosendahl said. It was a threat to a student who is one of our students, and because it is one of our students, we wanted to be overly cautious and make sure there was not anything dangerous to the kids, Darnell said. After nothing suspicious was found, Darnell made the decision to have school as scheduled on Monday. Darnell said he put out an all-call to GCMS students' parents at 7 a.m. as a proactive measure to make sure they were aware of what had happened. The next headline reads, City of Champaign, work on high-rise canceled for today. This article is written by Adalberto Toledo and is based out of Champaign. Complications during excavation of the new hub on campus high-rise have led to a cancellation of work at the site scheduled for today. Champaign Public Works engineer Harmon Jordan said Monday that Findorf, the contractor working on the site, isn't ready to pour concrete for the foundation of the 17-story building. Public Works officials postpone the planned closure of 6th Street between Green and John Streets until further notice. And remember, today on WDWS 1400 AM, tune in for The Morning Show. Senator Dick Durbin checks in with host Dave Gentry at 7:40 AM. If you missed that today, make sure to tune in to The Morning Shows at 7:40 AM. Penny for your thoughts, it's open line at 9 AM. Brian Barnhart's chat with Greta Henry at 9:40 AM. And NewsHour, Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin visits with Scott Beatty at 4:20 p.m., so that is later on today. To chime in, you can always call 217-356-9397. Again, that's phone number 217-356-9397. Or you can text 217-351-5357. That's 217-351-5357. For the News Gazette's entire menu of podcasts, visit their website and click on Podcasts. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for today, Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. I'll be back shortly to continue with part two, so please stay with me. Thanks for letting me read with you today, and I hope you have a wonderful day.